Before the break, we heard how that was somebody who came to your school and made a big impression on your life and fixed the future of your life, of where it was going to go. There was another person who changed your life around about the same age, at 10 years old. Who was it? There you are. There's a picture of the cheeky Gary Byfield at 10 years old. And who was it that changed your life at 10 years old?
What I'd like to share with you is that if you appreciate in that...
Hold on. Need to flip it off mute. There we go. There you go.
Is that... Yes, that's it.
So,
if you appreciate the shops were shut on a Sunday, and young men didn't really, or young boys didn't have much to do apart if there was no cadets going on, which there wasn't. So we spent most of our time going to Sunday school. Mum would send us down to get out the house on a Sunday so she could do what she needed to do around the house because she worked during the week. And used to play with the friends that I still are friends with now in and around the area. So we'd make our own go-karts. We'd go to and find activities to do, maybe not so legal sometimes, jumping into people's back gardens, messing about, taking the apples. Just getting up to mischief, I suppose. But one of the things we did was went to Sunday school. And they'd also have on a Friday a kids' club. And it was at that point that they would show these funny little projectors of Noah and Samson and various stories from the Bible at the end of the youth club. And then on the one Sunday school, and I didn't know who it was at that time that went with me to the room, one of the London City Mission helpers said, "Would you like to accept Jesus into your life as your saviour?" And I went, "Yeah, all right then, have a go at that." And I went with someone, which I'll mention in a moment, into a room and was prayed for. And the next thing I remember was having an overwhelming sense of absolute happiness and an uncontrollable amount of crying. And I couldn't stop crying. But it wasn't sadness, it was just full of joy and happiness. And I describe it as bursting out those doors now and just running up and down the road, full of life, and just being blessed. And I had no idea what that was. I do now, but I had no idea what that was. All I remember is that emotion that I had. And then after that, a real hunger to go and read the Bible. So much so that I went to St. Alfred's Church, and I went into the church, and I found the first Bible I could in there, and I walked out with it. And I took it back to my bedroom, and I remember going through the pages and reading it. Now, I already said to you, I wasn't a good reader. I had extra lessons at James Wolfe School for my reading, so I found it very hard. But I think this was the King James Version, and it was so difficult that I gave up on the first couple of pages, and I just left it there. But I never forgot that feeling that I had and that desire I had to find out more. But nothing actually came of that then, nothing more. It actually, because of my parents certainly weren't Christian, the only input I'd had was from school and Sunday school. There was nobody around me at that age of that boy to take me by the hand and lead me and show me what I needed to do. So I almost was wandering around with an emptiness inside me, thinking, what am I going to do? And that stayed for some time.
Some time. Mm. So we get this picture of a young lad who's...
mischievous.
Mischievous, and yet you found Jesus.
I did, yes.
And you knew you wanted to... Keep the community safe as a police officer. You'd gone into the army, and you kind of all about protecting and finding a place and finding a way. I'm guessing that you were a kind of model young man.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. And you know, for the cadets and that. Yeah, I was. Yeah, I knew what I wanted. I knew I needed to keep my slate clean if I wanted to get into.
And is that how life worked out for you then?
No, not at all. So I was 18, 19, and still hadn't grown in my faith until I met my girlfriend. And was at a friend, one of my friends that I'm still friends with now. It was his girlfriend's friend, and we went out on a date. And I got to know her, and it turned out that she was a vicar's daughter. And I started dating her, and she became the mother of my child. But the thing was, the relationship was quite difficult because I didn't know how to relate to the vicar. The coldness that I got when I went around the house, thought it was just that I was with his daughter, and he didn't really like that. And it was quite strained. The next scene, they moved. So, but the relationship didn't stop. It was a sort of distance, right? Not too far, but it meant I had to get a car, and we would see each other. We'd go on dates and things. And been going out for about 5 years, I suppose. And one day, she said, "I'm pregnant." And I thought, oh, how do you deal with that? How do you tell the vicar that I've got a daughter pregnant? And anyway, she said, "No, leave it to me. I'll deal with it." And I'd see her at the weekend, and I say, "How's it going? Does he want me to come and see him?" She said, no, he's taking it really badly. Family have taken it badly. You can't see them. In fact, I can't see you as much anymore." And then the relationship started to deteriorate. And I got to see her less and less. And then it got to a stage where she said, "They've taken it so badly that I can't see you anymore." And then that was it for me. I thought the relationship was over. As far as I said, "What are you going to do about the baby?" She said, "I'm probably going to have it aborted." So, "And what about my say in it? You don't have a say." So I tried, and then nothing happened. You know, nothing came back to me. She said, "It's best if you don't contact me anymore. I'm dealing with this. Let me just deal with it." And as far as I was concerned, the relationship was over. I started seeing another girl for about 3 weeks. And then I got a phone call from my mother. And she said, "Gary, Helen's been on the phone. You've got a daughter." Wow, okay. So I left work. I was at a training session as a manager, and I told the work that I needed to go to the hospital. And I went up to Fulham Hospital. And I said, "What on earth are you doing here?" I said, "Do you want to see your baby?" And she took me over to the cot, and I picked up this baby, and I looked at it and held her. And I said, "What's going on?" She said, "Well, you know, I told you that my dad was... didn't want to, he was upset by it all." She said, "He doesn't know. In fact, nobody knows." She said, "I've hidden everything. Work don't even know." I said, "Well, how'd you keep it secret then?" She said, "Well, I just didn't tell anybody, and I wore big clothes. So I held everything in. My parents don't know, just you and your mum." So I said, "Right, okay. What are you going to do?" She said, "Well, I was going to have her." This was 3 days later after she was born that I'd come and see my daughter. And she said, "I was going to have her adopted. And I've only just told the nurses in the hospital my name because they were concerned about me. And that's why they phoned you today." So I told my mum. And my mum let us come back to the house. And within a week, she went down to her vicarage with the baby in her arm, knocked on the door and said, "Here's your granddaughter." And then he asked me to come down and speak to him. And he said, "What's going on?" I said, "I don't know. I don't know. As far as I was concerned, it was all finished." And he said, "Well, what's going to happen?" I said, "Well, I love her. I said, that's my daughter. I want to make things right." So I said, "Good. Okay." And she came back to the vicarage. And then we started to date again. And within that week, I went out. I got a mortgage and bought my first property. So I'd become, in a week, I'd finished with a girl relationship. I started a relationship back with my girlfriend that had my daughter. And coming from a broken home, there's one thing I knew I didn't want is my children to go through what I went through or what my brother went through. So I decided that the right thing to do was be a dad. But I also found it very difficult to come to terms with that. I was 24. And overnight I became a husband, or a father, someone with a mortgage, and a dad. And that was quite hard for me. And then it came out that she moved out to hide the pregnancy from her parents and gone into a flat. She'd been living in Fulham, which is why the baby was born in Fulham, for 6 months of the pregnancy. And the reason she didn't see anybody was because she was going to have the baby adopted. She couldn't go through with the abortion. So I said, well, I would have found out and I would have taken that child on. That's my child. I did have a hard time dealing with it. She had been seeing some other people as well. I decided that I would be a bit of a rogue and do the same thing. I wasn't proud of myself, but I was quite, I suppose, claustrophobic at that point when I was hemmed in with everything. But then I got over that, and then life started to change. I got into the police. My career was going well as a young probationary officer. I loved my work. And I threw everything into work. I was one of those people that if you phoned and you wanted me to work, I'd drop everything and come into work. So I was the first person that they would phone.
You'd settled into married life. You eventually
got married. Yeah, 2 years later.
And then you had two more children.
Yeah. So I wanted to put it right.
Yeah.
And I wanted to try and make things work. And we did. So everything was starting to work together. We got married. I had two more children in that relationship. And for the first 10 years, everything was just dandy. You know, we'd bought another house together, the ones that we wanted, and things were going well, really well. I was loving a job, and I was earning as much money as I could, and home life was good. And then towards the end of that 10 years, it started to go wrong.
How did it start to go on? How did you feel it was changing?
The emotional side from the loving side wasn't there. There was no intimacy. That was drying up. There was constant tension within the home. And I preferred to be at work. So that's how I coped with it, really. And it just got worse and worse. And the intimacy wasn't happening at all. And unfortunately, there is an element within the police where you can, you know, I'm working, I'm doing this, I'm busy, or there's opportunities where people like you in uniform that present themselves. And, you know, I thought, well, I'll just have an affair. And now that will sort that side out of it. But I still want my married life. So I committed adultery for a year and was lying and cheating and hiding things. And I wasn't proud of myself. It was quite stressful, actually, to do that. And then the girl that I was seeing fell in love with me and said, I can't do this anymore. Either you leave your wife or you stay, decide what you want to do. If one thing I am is very, organized. And I thought, right, okay, what do you want? What do you want to do? And I thought, right, I need to see where I am financially. Can I afford? I know plenty of people in the police that have got divorced. I thought, can I afford to do this? So I went to the bank manager, and I went to my bank, and I asked for a statement. And my bank manager said, can you come into the office with me? And he said to me, Mr. Byfield, you owe 6 months rent on your, or 6 months mortgage. We're about to start repossession of your house. I said, you got it wrong. You need to check the account number here because I earn so much money. No, you've also got a £7,000 loan that you've taken out. You're not paying that back. And your account, you're in arrears. You're on the overdraft. I said, I'm not. He said, I've just got paid. He said, no, you are. And he showed me. And I had, I think I had three loans. I had 6 months of mortgage missing. And I realised then that my finances were in a dire mess, really. And it actually worked out to £27,000 that was in arrears for one people that I owed. Everybody that you can think of were holding their hand out, and that's the way I picture it. You've got the gas man, the electric man, the rates man. Everyone had their hand out for money from. I owed everybody money, and I couldn't understand it because I was earning good money, and we shouldn't have been in that mess. Unfortunately, my mother had been diagnosed with cancer, and it was terminal. But the thing is, the thing you want your mum. It doesn't matter how old you are, you always want your mum. So I went round to my mum's. She had no hair. And she was ill. And I said, Mum, my life's a mess. I'm in debt. I'm seeing somebody else, and I don't know what to do. He said, oh, son. She said, you've got to go and sort it out. And I phoned my wife up, and I said, I know what's been going on. I'm coming home. She said, what do you mean? I said, I know about the money. And the phone went silent. I said, I'm coming home. I went home, and I said to her, what is going on? She said, what? And she still tried to deny it. And I went to where we keep all the bookwork for all our expenses and things, and it had all been cleared out. And she'd taken everything out and put it in the bins outside. So I went and got the bins. This is what I do when I search houses, because people throw stuff and hide stuff away. I went to the bins, and I got all this paperwork out, and it had all been ripped in half, and I started putting it back together. £700 for the gas, £600 for the electric, £1,000 for the rates, county court judgment in my name, county court judgment in my name, county court judgment in my name. I let her deal with the finances, I earned the money, she dealt with the housework, and I trusted. And my whole life just fell apart. My kids, we were shouting and arguing. And they could hear that we were arguing about money. My son went upstairs, and he got his piggy bank, and he brought it downstairs. He said, Dad, you can have that. I never wanted my relationship to fail. I never wanted to be like my dad. I put everything back together again. Thank goodness my job supported me, and I went to see a debt counsellor. And he said, Gary, we can sort this out. There's a £4,000 loan here that will pay all your amenities and put you back on track. He said, but the £2,000 in that part is deception, which is put in different names you can't deal with. That's got to come from her family. I can't deal with anything that's criminal. But we can help you. So I had counselling. I had support from my work in the way of supporting my finances, but what I couldn't do was repair my marriage. And I said to this other girl that I need to sort this out before I think about doing anything else. And I put everything right. And then my wife then had, I gave her just one bill, and that was a telephone bill. And I said, right, let's try and sort this out. And I wasn't going for a divorce then, but I was certainly separated and I moved out. I had too much to deal with. I needed time on my own. Although it wasn't really I needed time to be loved, really. That's what I was looking for in that. And I was getting that from this other woman. And she loved me and she wanted to be with me. And that was really a difficult decision to make. But at that particular time, there was so much going on in my life that I didn't know where to turn. And I went with my brother. It was a lorry driver, and he was going over Calais. And I said, I'll come with you just to get away and to think, try and put things right. And I remember going over on a ferry crossing, and I walked at the back of that boat. And I looked at the back of that ship, and I wanted to jump in. It was just a black churn of water, a mess, and that was my life. And I looked down there and I thought, I could stop this pain now. But I didn't. I didn't. I couldn't for my children. I needed to sort things out. And my mum died. I got divorced. I wasn't in a good place. I hated the fact that the church was responsible. I hated God. I hated everything to do with the church, because I saw that as that relationship that had destroyed mine. Everything she told me, there was other things that had gone in her life that I wasn't happy with, that I couldn't cope with. And that was part of the reason why she spent the money to make her feel good about herself, because of things that happened to her as a child. And it was all centered around this vicar. And it was all centered around the family. And I hated humanity. I hated what I was seeing, the people in life, the way people were treating people in the world. And I lost reality and that sense of wanting to help people, because I saw bad in everybody. And I looked at people and I thought, what are you hiding? What are you disguising? What are you holding on to and not sharing with people? And it really started to put me in a bad place.
Now, we invited you here this evening because we know that you love the Lord Jesus. Mm. And we know that the place you're in now is very different to the place you're describing.
Absolutely.
To us at that time. Mm. How did the Lord break in to your life and turn it around?
Okay.
What changed? Because it sounds like he'd have his work cut out for him.
Oh, absolutely.
To bring Gary Byfield back to even a place of happiness, never mind a place of loving God. So. What changed for you, and how did you let God back in?
Okay, so I gave up on people. I'd stay with the girl that I was going to leave for, which I did for 8 years, and then things changed with her. She wanted children, and I said no. I said, I've got 3 children. I'm not having children all over the place. I'm having another one here. And I said, if that's what you want to do, then you're going to have to go and do that. And then I gave up on women. I said, that's it. I've had enough. And I said to my friends, I don't want this anymore. And I surrendered. And I said, I was going to go to live out in Canada with my best friend. And he said, don't worry, I'll get you a Canadian lady. I said, I don't want any ladies. So, I gave up. I know that. and I surrendered everything. And my friend said to me, go out with this girl. And I said, no, not interested. Just go on, have a go and see this girl. And for 3 months he went on to say, go on, just go out with this girl. And I said, no, not interested. So much so that the only way I was going to stop him was to say, look, give me a number, I'll have a coffee, and that's it. Knowing that I wasn't going to do anything, not even enter into a relationship again. And in fact, I said to my other friend, if I even think about it, make sure that I don't. Keep me away from it. Anyway, so he gave me this girl's number. I phoned it, and I said, my mate said to me that I should phone you, or should go and have a coffee, because he knew that she was a girl that I would like. So I said, and she said, well, I will if you send me a picture of you. So there I am on one of the patrols just after the bombings, and taking pictures of myself in reassurance patrols up in Trafalgar, up in Leicester Square, sending it to a girl that I don't know, that I've really got no interest in. And then she said, oh yeah, I'll meet you for coffee. So we arranged to meet in Blackheath for a coffee. And I remember turning up there, getting out the car, thinking, I don't even know what this girl is. I haven't even asked. I don't know what she's like, how I'm going to meet her, whatever. She's got a picture of me. She's going to have to say hello. So I sent her a text to say, you'll have to identify yourself to me because I don't know what you're like. Anyway, so this was at Blackheath in Starbucks. And as I walked in there, there was one girl in there. I mean, that's 11 o'clock is unheard of. One person sitting in there was my future wife. And I sat down next to her and I said, do you want a drink? No. And she went, I've got one. I thought, yes, I didn't got to pay for a drink. So, so if you know me, you know that. So I walked up to her and I sat down and I said, right, I've been married, divorced. I'm not going to get married again. I'm not having any more children. I'm not really looking for a relationship. But my mate said I should come and speak to her. And she went, oh, all right then. Okay. And then we had, and I told all the things that I've just told you. And then the next thing it was, do you want to go for another date? I said, yeah, all right then. So we had a proper date. So we sat down and we had a meal and a chat. And she'd been through a very similar experience with a divorce and a husband and thing, been let down badly. I'd been let down badly. And we both didn't want to be hurt again. And this is my wife, Helen, at the front here, who is a Christian.
We can see a photograph. There they are on their wedding day. And Helen's here this evening. It's great to have you, Helen.
So we were taking it very, very slowly. We were both been hurt, and we both didn't want to be hurt again. And we were very gingerly working our way through. And she was very patient. You appreciate, I mean, this is now nearly 40 years or so that I've not had any real feelings with the Lord and that. And now all of a sudden, things are starting to, I'm starting to ask questions. And my wife has been a Christian for, well, I come from a very good Christian family and the background. And I'd ask her questions like, you know, what's that about? And then she'd just tell me. And she was very patient and very loyal. And you need to be patient with me. And I started to ask questions, finding out about what this was about, what Christ was about, and what it was all about, and trying to find the church and things. But there was a point in our relationship where it's a definite road where I could carry on where I was, the old Gary, or was a definite new life to be had with the new Gary. And it was a real turning point. And me and my wife then had a minor hiccup, an issue, and we went away for the weekend for our anniversary. And her mum prayed, we said, mum, pray for us. So her mum's very spiritual, and she prayed for us. And whilst we were in the hotel room in Brussels, in the morning, and this wasn't the sunlight, in the morning, there was an overwhelming peace that came upon the pair of us, which is what her mum was praying for. And within that peace, there was a golden glow within the room. And well, first of all, I thought it was the light coming in, but it was a different light. It was a golden, bright light, and it was an over all-encompassing, it seeped through your body, it seeped through everything. It was everywhere, but it was such peace. But there was no time. It could have been there for hours or years, or it could have been there for seconds. It was just incredible. And I turned to my wife and I said to her, "Can you feel that?" And she said, "Yes, I can." And it's that stayed with us then. That was really special. And I'm thinking, right, I don't know what that. I can only think that was a God moment that touched the pair of us to say that this is a real blessing. It's your choice, and you still have choices to make. Stay with me, come with me, or go your old way. And I made a very much conscious effort to come the new way and give it everything. And we came back that weekend, and the first thing we did was walk into Biggin Hill Church, New Life Church. And we walked through that door, and Dave White, the pastor there, said, "Welcome." And it was like we'd just been away, and we're coming back home. And it was wonderful. There was no stress, there was no feeling of, this is strange, but it was just like coming home. And we sat and spoke about it, and we said, this is where we want to be. And wouldn't it be good if they were doing an alpha? And wouldn't it be good if that's where I thought, yeah, that's right. And they did. They were doing an alpha. And I remember doing that alpha course and asking these questions and then ask the questions and they'd give me the answer. Yeah, I can understand that. Next one. And I was doing it like a policeman. And it was answering all the questions that I'd had about it. And I thought, do you know what? I'm doing this. And I remember at the bottom, there's another thing. We were asked to be godparents for our friends. And I remember thinking, yeah, we'll be godparents. And the vicar that came over, he gave us a lecture and he showed us a video on being godparents, how important it was. I thought, this is serious stuff. And I remember seeing this path leading up the hill to the cross. And I thought, and he said, you know, that's what we're asking you to do. We're asking you to come back to the path and walk with God and follow Jesus.
We've got a photo of you.
Oh, yes.
Here, being baptised, and I guess that's at Biggin Hill.
That's it, yeah. That was marvellous, absolutely marvellous.
The image that we've got there, look at your face.
Mm.
You're absolutely, absolutely thrilled there. You've just told us how when you came back from Brussels and as your faith had grown again and you went to the church, the questions that you were asking were being answered. It was when you were 10.
That's right.
That those questions started and that those questions remained unanswered all those years.
Mm.
Through everything that you did in the police and the army, through everything that you went through with your first marriage and the relationships before and after that, and to where you are now, do you think that it's going to be a situation now where, as you've kind of chosen this new way to walk, that it's going to be an easy walk? Do you think that you've kind of got over the hump and it's all? how are you going to walk on with God from this point? Where does God have a place in your life as you walk on into the next chapter of it?
Mm. I just want to expand on the baptism as well there, because it really, for me, and all everything I'd carried, the adultery, the way I felt towards people, you know, my life and how it was, I was, and my mum dying as well, not giving her the time as well, I was wrapped up in myself. I carried a lot of guilt for that. I've now laid that firmly at the cross, and that's for me where it lays and lies. I am a new creation, and I walk a new path, and I choose to do that because that's my choice. No one's made me do that, and by following that path, I am amazed by what I've been shown and what I see, and that's the way it's affecting my life as well. Now that baptism there, one of the chaps, my mother-in-law, gave me a Bible with Proverbs 3 in it. Two other people gave me Proverbs 3, and I'm thinking, coincidence. There you go. The next thing was Jeremiah 29, that came as well, and then someone else gave me Jeremiah 29, and so I thought, that's a third time. And then I thought, what's happening here? Because I've just read about sowing the seeds and the good seed. And then someone else said to me about, it's about the parable of the seeds. And then I went to my mother-in-law, I said, look, does this happen to everybody? People that are becoming Christians about scripture, I get it three times. It's almost like back at school when I had to read it again and understand it. And now it's almost repeating itself as an adult, read it again and understand it and accept it. And it's like, because I sat down with my mother-in-law and I said to her, you know, these things keep coming into me through, and it's, you know, I've read things. And then she said, it's like the parable of the seeds. I thought, that's the third time again now. So things were happening that were to me, and I just couldn't explain that my life was changing. And ever since I've been on the path now and sort of said, I'm going to walk you, I'm going to read the Bible, I'm going to do it your way. I've tried it my way, it hasn't worked, I've messed it up. Once I've got on that path, yeah, we have hiccups along the way, but you bring yourself back on it. And I describe it as that 10-year-old boy who has found Jesus but doesn't know the way. And I'm walking around in a big room, and all the family and other Christians are around me, but they're not holding my hand. And then my wife comes out of the darkness from the shadows, takes me by the hand, and leads me forward down the Christian life. And that's where I am. And then the next vision I've got is me as that 10-year-old boy with the excitement that I had there, running down the corridor. Jeremiah 29, in this corridor, shut the door, up here, there's Proverbs 3, and it's just scripture all the way through, and it all relates to my life and how it's affecting my life and changing. And at that baptism, one of the chaps come up to me and said to me, I've got a vision of you going around giving your testimony, and that's something that I'm doing. And that was back then when I was baptized 4 years ago.
Well, Gary, it's just been a joy to hear your testimony tonight. It's been really encouraging for us to know that throughout a messy life, God is still present and walks alongside us, even though when we were talking before, you said, even though I didn't know he was there, was walking alongside me. And it's great to see the both of you. So thrilled and so happy and so rejuvenated in life, in love, and in your faith. And we want to thank you so much for sharing with us this evening. Can you just give Gary a round of applause? If some of the things that Gary has talked about this evening mean something to you, or have jolted memories or woken up questions in you, then please do stay around and chat. I don't think Gary's rushing off quite so quickly, and there are others here who will talk with you. We've got some little booklets at the back which will help you if you don't know about how to walk that path with Jesus, how to be friends with him, that will help you to understand that. And as Gary says, the joy of scripture, we would ask you not necessarily to steal one of the Bibles in front of you, as Gary did, but we've got some Luke's Gospels, which you'll find easier to get into than starting at Genesis 1. So thank you very much for coming. Thank you for sharing, and do please stay around if you'd like. And again, Gary, just one more thank you.
Thank you. So, thank you.